It's good to see all who have come to the meeting tonight. We really appreciate that, especially after the busy weekend that you've had. We really appreciate you being out again tonight. Now, can we turn first of all, please, to one or two scriptures, Mark chapter 16. Mark chapter 16, please. And verse 15 to start with, Mark chapter 16 and verse 15. And he said unto them, Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Verse 20, and they went forth and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them. Mm-hmm. Just a verse in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. 1 Corinthians and chapter 16. And just verse 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 9. For a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries. Mm. A great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries. I suppose as we look through Scripture, there are times when we can look at open and closed doors. We know as we look through the book of Acts that there were times when doors were closed as far as the preaching of the gospel is concerned. And as we read through the book of Acts, they were forbidden of the Holy Spirit. And they attempted to go to one place, attempted to go to Bithynia, and doors were closed. But then on other occasions, there are times when we find that doors are opened. And then we have the message, come over into Macedonia and help us. A door that is open. Now, in every single one of our lives, we will have doors that are opened as far as the gospel is concerned. And there will be times when you have opportunities, and even as an assembly, you will have opportunities that others don't. And the challenge really I want to leave with you tonight is the fact that in all of our lives and as assemblies, we will all have opportunities, and there will be doors that we are able to push to see where we can go through. And the challenge is, are we brave enough? Have we the courage to just push those doors and use the opportunities that the Lord gives us to be able to reach out with the gospel? Now, I appreciate that one of the things I'm going to talk to you about tonight is a completely unique opportunity that has been presented to me. And that was a challenge. Because although other people didn't have that, the opportunity that I have, what am I prepared to do with it? How far am I prepared to go with it? And the Lord just continues to open doors and leave doors ajar almost to see whether I've got the courage and the strength, bravery, to be able to push those doors and to be able to serve him and reach the gospel. We've read, go ye into all the world and preach the gospel, and that is the divine commission for each and every one of us. That's our responsibility, to go into all the world and preach the gospel. One of the things that really challenged me right from the beginning, and I've been doing, the first thing I'm going to talk to you about, of course, is the presentation. We'll get to that in a moment. Because I've been asked to just speak to you about, first of all, our call to full-time service. We left employment last year at the end of May, 31st of May. And apologies for one or two people that were at the commendation, so you'll hear one or two things you've heard before. But we left work at the end of May, just in the middle of May last year. I'd done 30 years with the company, and very grateful to the Lord to be able to do that and for the job that he gave me, and the privilege of being able to work for the company, and the opportunities also to have a boss that was very flexible to be able to, over the last 10 years, to be able to start to do this work. But we got to a point where I couldn't do both things. It became evident, really clear. And we'll talk about one or two things, how the Lord led us and spoke to us very forcibly, I think, in many occasions. But it became very clear that if I carried on as I was doing, then neither would be done properly or effectively. And so we came to the point at the end of May where we left our business, and then our accommodation was on the 1st of June last year. So how did we get to that point? Just want to take you back really, because that process was not a short process. It was quite a long process. Actually, I would say 7 years to get to that point. Quite a long 7 years for us. But there were times when I look back over those years, and I just want to mention a few meetings that really spoke to us and really challenged us, and we really felt the Lord speaking to us. Now, all of the speakers that I'm going to mention tonight, I've spoken to them. At our commendation meeting, I had two people speaking, Stephen Baker and Philip Kay. It's very important for us that we had those two speakers. Stephen and Philip had been a great help to us, and a lot of conversations were had, especially with Stephen, I suppose, more than Philip, but both of them had been a great help. And even some of the names that I'm going to mention now in conversation had been a great help and a great support, and also just to listen to us as we thought about and spoke to them about going full time. So I said it was a 7-year process. I want to take you back first of all to 2016. This was a meeting I don't think will ever leave me. Ian Jackson was speaking at a meeting in Warrington, and in that meeting he spoke, and I won't give you the details of the message, but in that meeting he was speaking on Acts chapter 8, 9 and 10. But the whole thrust of that meeting was arise and go. Now, one or two conversations had already happened, and there was thoughts in my mind and different things that had happened. I'm not going to mention all of the things tonight. I'm just going to mention just some key meetings and different things that happened. But already that process in my mind was the Lord really leading us to do this. Well, I don't think I've ever been in a meeting like this one in 2016 when Ian spoke. And when Ian spoke about arise and go, it was almost as if I was the only one sat in the room. After that meeting, I went to speak to Ian straight after the meeting. Ironically, my brother-in-law, who opened that meeting after Ian had finished speaking, got up and gave out the hymn, "Where he may lead me, I will go, for I have learned to trust him so." After speaking to Ian at the end of that meeting, he said to me, "To be honest," he said, "I never intended to take the meeting like that. That's not how it was in my mind as I came tonight, but that's how it ended up." Now, that to me was the first, going back to 2016, was probably one of the first meetings that I will never forget, which made a deep impression upon us. I'll then take you back to 2017, December 2017. And we were in Scotland at the New Year conferences, as we have done for the last few years. And our brother Josh Jacob was there, and he just took up a verse, which quite an unusual verse. Ezekiel chapter 22, verse 30. And that verse says this: "I sought for a man among them that would make up the hedge and stand in the gap." The challenge of that message that day was, are you prepared to be that man? Well, again, I felt the weight of that, and following that, going into then from 2016 to 17 to 18, all this time, what you're going to hear to see tonight of some of the presentation, I've been doing 10 years, so I was always already in the thick of doing that and trying to do my job at the same time. But these messages kept coming. New Year 2018. We were up at the conference in Liverpool, and a brother Ken Totten from Cambridge was speaking. The whole thrust of his message in one of the sessions, in the first session actually, was the call of Moses. And as he spoke about the call of Moses, Ken was quite direct in his ministry that afternoon. I spoke to him about that since that. And he was very direct. But one of the things he said was, is there someone here that the Lord was speaking to serve the Lord and to give their all for him? And if so, are you prepared to fulfill it? That was the message. But of course, in all of these things, as all of these things were filling my mind, and I was maybe thinking, well, is this the way the Lord will have us to go? Of course, the devil has a go. And he would attack and put all sorts of different thoughts in my mind that this couldn't possibly be the case. And also, already 3 years had gone by and nothing had moved forward. Yes, I keep getting messages, but then the question in my mind was, well, are you reading things into this? It's not really for people like you anyway, going full time. So Are you just reading things into it? It's not really happening. This is what the devil was putting into my mind. So, the culmination of that was Easter 2019. And because nothing really had developed, nothing had gone forward, I was very much before the Lord at Easter 2019. I was saying to the Lord, look, Easter weekend's a busy weekend as far as conference is concerned. Liverpool, Bicester. We were going to sit in a lot of meetings. And I said to the Lord, look, if this is not meant to be, if it's definitely not meant to be that we go full-time, then I don't want anything mentioned about full-time service in any of these conferences or meetings. Not one thing. And if that was the case, I would have to accept that that's what's to be, and I will accept it. So we went to Liverpool. That was the first conference we went to. Brother John Fleck was the first speaker, and he spoke about John the disciple leaving all to follow the Lord. He then followed that up. It's time to leave and give all in service for the Lord. Another message that day was this: for to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. First message, first conference. Go down to Bicester the same weekend. It was at that time when they used to have the bit of ministry on the Sunday evening. We went down to the Sunday evening ministry. And there was a brother, Frank Soner, who was over. And that evening, he spoke on quite an unusual verse. Ezekiel chapter 22, verse 30. I sought for a man to make up the hedge and stand in the gap. The following day, Ian Jackson spoke on, as my Father has sent me, even so send I you. So, you'd think I'd get the message by that, wouldn't you? But still, bring that right up to date then, and into 2023. Sharon had also been spoken to in a number of different ways, and even though you would think by all of those meetings already over those last few years, you would think that would be enough. But I was still looking for confirmation. I was looking for the Lord to confirm the confirmation. And fortunately, our God is a very gracious God, a very patient God. Moved to 2023, and now in Derby, Phil Colson was having a series of meetings, and he was there from the Saturday to the Wednesday. I couldn't get to any of those meetings until the Wednesday because I'd got presentations to do. Got to the Wednesday, and Phil spoke on that night, Genesis 22, Abraham and Isaac. The challenge was, are you prepared to put all on the altar for him? Present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God. He then went to Romans chapter 6 and talked about how to know and reckon and yield all for the Lord. At the end of that meeting, just for the last 15 minutes or so, Phil spoke very personally about his and Rachel's call to full-time service. If I was looking for a confirmation, then that was it. To bring that right up to date then, just before we then had it confirmed in our mind that that was what we were to do, and October 2023, Jack Hay was at Derby again, and he was there from Saturday till the Wednesday. And we were very much before the Lord in the fact that we had it confirmed and we knew it was the right thing to do, but we were saying, be nice if just there was a message. Jack had another message, just to put the final piece in the jigsaw. Well, he spoke on something different on the Saturday to what he did on the Wednesday, but the sort of main messages that he gave us throughout those days was on the Saturday was this: don't delay. Don't delay. On the Monday was this: we should be marked by obedience. That was the thrust of his message. On Tuesday, those that are called, just do it. On Wednesday, if we don't do the work, we'll be the ones that miss out because the Lord will get somebody else to do it. And that was the thrust of his message all the way through those few nights. So that was the final piece in the jigsaw, and that brings us right up to date, because then we spoke to the elders, and then I was able to speak to my boss, And although I was on a 12-month contract, I should have given 12 months notice from the beginning of December. And you could imagine the look on his face when I told him that after 30 years, I was going to give up my job, my car, my salary, and go and serve the Lord. So you can imagine what his face looked like when I told him that and tried to explain what I was going to do. Anyway, I still don't think he understood, but we managed to get down from 12 months notice to 6 months notice, and then finally left at the end of May. So as we think about that, and as we think about what I've been doing over these last 10 years, and also what we're doing now, I just want to run through a few of those things. And as I was saying a few earlier, one of the big things that spoke to us and spoke to me as I was started to do the World War I presentation, which I think pretty much most of you have seen, if not all of you, we've done it down here, we've did it in the Toaster Town Hall, and also Dustin, I think we did it a few years ago as well in the Village Hall there. One of the things that really made a big impression upon me was that doing the World War I presentation on the story of William Coltman was the fact that we were stepping out of our comfort zone into other people's comfort zone to be able to preach the gospel. You know, when we preach the gospel in our halls, it's, you know, pretty much the majority of people there are believers. It's quite comfortable for us to be able to do that. And you're the majority. And the people that are there listening to you, most of them are going along with you and agreeing with you. But what we were seeking to do was actually to step out of that and go out of our comfort zone into other people's comfort zone, into their groups. And you're on your own, and you preach to them. And that was a big challenge to me, because on the one hand, we're asking people to come to us to hear the gospel, come into our comfort zone. But was I prepared to step out of my comfort zone to go to them? And that was the big challenge, and that's what we've sought to do over the last few years. Now, the presentation, of course, is based on my great-granddad, for those that don't know, and William was a believer, he was in fellowship in an assembly, but he went to the First World War and, as a result of his faith, refused to fight and went as a stretcher bearer and was awarded a number of medals as a result of it. That's the thrust of the presentation that I do to people. And we could ask the question, well, how did that all come about? Because you must have known that William had been awarded those medals. You must have known the story. Well, yeah, I knew that he'd been awarded the medals. I knew it was fairly important. I don't think we realise the significance of that, his life and what he'd done, until the book was written about 15 or 16 years ago. But, and also the other thing is that we think is important to mention is the fact that whenever anything was done to recognise William's achievements and the family were invited to it all, whether that be an event or whatever, out of all the family that used to go to it, I was the one person that never went. I didn't go to anything. I wasn't interested. I wasn't interested in war. I wasn't interested really in William's life, although great as what he did, that was amazing. But my opinion, my reasoning behind it all was, well, William, when he was alive, was quite a quiet man and didn't seek any attention for what he had done. So when anything's put on to recognise his achievements, why should I go? Because he wouldn't have wanted that, so why should I go? So I just didn't go. Everybody else with the family went, but I didn't. So what changed? Well, we had some meetings down at Winsall, and Graham Patterson came down from Scotland to do those children's meetings. While he was with us, he read the book, the William Coltman book, and he said to me afterwards, he said, this is a massive gospel opportunity. I said, how? How is that a gospel opportunity? He said, well, that story, he said, I go into hundreds of schools. He said, that story could be told, and schools would love it from a history point of view, from a religious point of view. He said, it's just a massive opportunity. He said, I want to turn that into a presentation. So I said, well, you go ahead. So he professionally got about 12 or 14 slides done. And so off he went around Scotland doing this presentation on William Coltman. I had the presentation. I was asked to do it in a school in Burton. And just thinking about that afterwards, I then saw a report about a Women's Institute group that had met and had a speaker. And I just thought, I wonder if there's an opportunity there. So I started contacting WIs and different things. And as a result of that, we're now into year 11 this year of doing this presentation all over the UK, and so many opportunities and so many different groups. Out of all the 11 years that we're now into, of all the groups that we've done, we've only been into the same group, I think it's two or three times over those 11 years. So they're new groups all the time, and throughout this year are all new groups. So what I want to do is start to talk about that first of all, stepping out of our comfort zone. First of all, we'll talk about the First World War presentation. This is one or two slides from the presentation itself on William. John 3:16 is always mentioned in every presentation. So all the presentations I'm going to show you and talk to you about, we talk about John 3:16. So there's a lot of factual information in the presentation about the war, but there's also, as we go through the presentation and tell the story of William's life, we weave the gospel into that. So John 3:16 is in there. The fact of the story, the book is called The Story of the Two Crosses. The presentation is called The Story of the Two Crosses. The reason for that is when William died in 1974, the man who spoke at his funeral spoke about the story of two crosses. That's what was spoken about at his funeral. And so that theme has followed on. So you get to this point through the presentation and you talk about why William's life is described as the story of the two crosses. You can talk about the Victoria Cross, but then you get to the cross of Calvary. And you can talk about the cross of Calvary as well. The story of the unknown warrior in Westminster Abbey, again, is another part of the gospel message, because around, as you know, around the edge of the unknown warrior is four verses from the Bible, and we single one out, unknown and yet well known from 2 Corinthians, and again bring the gospel in. So the gospel is weaved into the presentation a number of times. And then finally, pretty much every presentation we go into, unless it's in schools, we'll get three tracks. So I physically hand these out. I don't just leave them on a table at the back and say, if you want to take them, take them. I actually physically hand them out. So whether the group's 10 people or whether it's 150 people. If it's 150 people, then I normally get people from the group to actually hand the tracks out for me. So it's great to be able to just finish the presentation. You've got other people handing three tracks out to every single person. So they've heard the gospel in the presentation. They take the three tracks home. They read the gospel through that as well. And then also, normally I've got a few copies of the book available for me to sell as well and make available to anybody that hears the gospel and hears the presentation. So where have I been with this presentation over the last few years and continue to do so? I suppose the four biggest groups would be these four. The WI, Inspiring Women, Probus, U3A, Rotary International. And you might say, well, what do those groups stand for? What do they do? To be honest, I've no idea. I'm not really interested in what they stand for, or what they do. The whole point of me going is to preach the gospel, hand the tracts out, and go. So the WI was, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, the WI was the first one where we started. I saw a little report in a paper and it said that somebody had been to speak to this local WI, and my mind just got thinking, I wonder if that's an opportunity there to be able to get into the WIs. My next immediate thought was, well, WIs probably are finished, to be honest. There's probably no WIs around anymore, or hardly any at all. So I thought, well, I'll just Google it and just to see how many groups there are. Well, how wrong was I? Currently, there are 6,300 WI groups in this country. 6,300 groups. So I'm just, whatever you see tonight, I am just scratching the surface. I'm not even making any headway into these groups. As far as Derbyshire is concerned, when I started to look, currently in Derbyshire, there are 142 groups. I just looked at the three counties near to where we are. We're in Staffordshire. Derbyshire's 142. Staffordshire's 111. Leicestershire is 116. Just for your interest, Northamptonshire has got 119 groups, of which I've been to some, but nowhere near 119. So 6,300 groups in the UK. The first WI group I went to, you can just imagine it, with fear and trepidation, going into a WI group. The only man there. But the first one we went to was just a few miles down the road from where we live. And I remember Dad coming with me as well. And we had no idea how it was going to go. The other sad thing is that we have to do is, very often that you go into a WI group, and with many of these groups, they will have a bit of a business meeting before you do your presentation. And that is the case with the WIs, certainly. You have to sit through their business meeting. So if you want to know anything about jam making, or flower arranging, I'm your man. So the WI, the first one we went into, I think there was about 40 odd people there. But the interesting thing about that one, and I will never forget that group either, not only because it was the first, but a woman came to us afterwards and she stood speaking to me and Dad, and she said, I've never been in this hall before and I don't know a soul here. So we said, well, what are you doing here then? She said, well, I'm up visiting family who are not well. This morning I walked to the shop and I walked past this village hall, and saw a poster outside advertising this talk. So she said, I thought I'd come. I've never been in this hall before. I don't know a soul here. And I turned to Dad afterwards and I said, and she's heard the gospel, got some tracts, and she's gone home. We might never see her again. She might never hear the gospel again. She might never be given a tract again. But she's heard the gospel. She's taken the gospel away with her. That was the first WI that we went into. So, every WI I noticed works very differently. Each county works very differently. So there are some counties that you can... Initially when I started doing this over 10 or 11 years ago, started sending messages out to a few WIs to see if they were interested, and they all were. I don't need to do that now purely because it's all word of mouth. I go to one group and they'll take a contact card because I have produced, Luke's produced a contact card with all my details on the back advertising the story of the two crosses. So I just leave that at the front when I finish and just say that I go into other groups. If anybody's interested, then please take a card. And that's just how it happens. They take the cards, they pass it on to another group, and then they contact you. And that's how it's been going for over 10, 11 years. So every sort of county works differently. So Leicestershire was a unique one, because Leicestershire contacted me and said, we've heard that you do a talk, but the way we run things is that we invite you to an evening where you give a snapshot in 15 minutes of your presentation, and we'll invite some of the sort of more important people of the WIs of Leicestershire just to see what you're like, and they'll mark you, and then if you get approved, you'll get into the approved speaker's book. So I went along to this evening and I thought, well, so I did my bit and I thought I'll hang around maybe to listen to some of the others. I listened to one more and then I made my exit. But I got approved. So all the time you're talking during those 15 minutes, there's women sat there making notes, and then they give you a score, and then it gets reported back to the chief, whatever. And they decide then, they have a meeting and they decide whether you're approved or not. And I got approved. So all of a sudden, a load of Leicestershire WIs started contacting me, asking me to go to that. So that's how Leicestershire worked. No other county works like that. I've never come across another county that works like that. So, WIs. Well, this is just one or two pictures I've just brought to show you some of the groups that I go to. Now, these cannot be... This was the other problem during the time I worked, because you would think that all of these groups meet at night. They don't. Some of them meet in the day. Some of them meet in the morning. There was... One of the groups I go to, one of the Probus groups, Probus stands for professional business people, and they're all retired, but they're ex-professional business people. One of those groups rang me one day and said, we're the daybreak Probus group. The key word in that phrase is daybreak. So I said, right, okay. So I said, what does that mean? She said, well, we actually, most of us still work. So she said, we meet at just after 7 in the morning, we have breakfast, you do your presentation, we go to work. So I don't know whether there's many gospel meetings going on at 7:30 in the morning, but there was that morning. So the presentation, 7:30, and then they all got up. As soon as I'd finished, taken the tracts, went to work. So this was a WI in Great Bar in Birmingham, 52 people there. Another, you'll notice that there's one or two men in that group as well. Sometimes when it's something like this, for some reason, and I'm delighted they do it, but they open it up to their husbands and whatever, because it's to do with war and they might be interested in the war and that sort of thing. So you often get, they call it an open night, where they just invite the men as well. So it might not just be the women. This is a big group in Derby. I think there's about 50 odd there for that one. Probus, again, as we've said, professional business people. And these are another group. Probably the three biggest or the three most common groups are the WI, the Probus and the U3A of the four, the big four. Rotary are not as busy now as they used to be. They're probably the smallest of the four groups as well. But Probus, mainly men groups, Probus. But this was another one in Birmingham. This was in Stockport in Manchester, 10 o'clock in the morning in Manchester. This was a women's Probus group, actually met in Chesterfield FC football ground. So this was my view as I stood speaking to them. That was where they met. And this was one in Nottingham. Another Probus group in Nottingham. Now, some of these groups can be very small, and some of them can be huge, absolutely huge. Rotary, again, as I mentioned, probably the smallest of the four groups that I do. The last one I did was in Burton Albion Football Club. This was the Burton Rotary Club. They meet in Burton Albion Football Club. I've done that group twice now, but the first time I did it was probably when I just started over 10 years ago, so there's a 10-year gap between them. But U3A are by far the biggest group that I do. U3A, if you've never heard of U3A, which I hadn't done either, in fact, I've not heard of any of these really, the U3A are University of the Third Age. And I was introduced to the U3A a number of years ago, and they are huge. Their groups are huge. Now, a U3A group can have probably, wouldn't be unusual to have over 800 to 1,000 members in each group. Now, what they tend to do, the U3A, is they then split off and do different things. So there'll be a group that go off and do poetry, there'll be a group that learn French, there'll be a group that go out for lunch, there'll be a group that go to the cinema, and they all do different things in different groups. But once a month, they all have a meeting, and everybody's invited to that meeting. So you won't get 800, but quite possibly, quite normally, you would get well over 100. Well over 100 people in your groups. So this is a U3A group. I was going to tell you where it was. I can't remember where it was. Not that far away from here, actually. But this was they met in a church somewhere, and this was a group, and there was about 110 at that one. So it's great to be able to not only do the presentation and preach the gospel, but then I got some of their members to actually hand the tracts out for me. Now, the unique thing about this one was a few months later, I was asked to go to do a U3A group in a similar area, and I thought, that's strange. And then when I spoke to the person that had booked me, they were giving me directions to the car park and the way into the place. And I suddenly thought, I recognise this. I said, I think there's been some mistake. She said, why? I said, well, I think I've already done your group just a few months ago. And I just give a few more details. She said, oh no. She said, actually, she said, we do use the same building to meet. But she said, it's two completely different groups. In fact, they're the small group. We're the bigger group. Oh, right. So there was 110 at this one. The next time I went there, just a few months later, there was 160 in there. So just within a few months, you get 110, 160, all hearing the gospel, and all then taking tracts away with them, some taking books as well. So U3A are by far the biggest. Just one or two pictures of some of the other places that I've been to. This is another big one, over 100 at that one. That was just as we'd set up. And so all of these are great opportunities as far as the gospel is concerned. Now, of course, the other thing that I've learnt is that although I've spoken to you about the four bigger groups, WI, Probus, Rotary, U3A, there are so many other groups out there as well that I get invited to. And all around us, one thing that's impressed upon me over the last few years is that in every town, in every village, in every city, literally there are countless groups meeting socially which all have a speaker. And I've just tapped into that and said, I'll be your speaker. But all around us, there are people meeting socially who want a speaker. They want someone to come and speak to them. And so the Historical Society is another probably big one. It's probably getting bigger than the Rotary Club now. A lot of historical societies around that ask me to go and speak to them. A lot of people that just have coffee mornings. Or there are all sorts of names for their groups that they give. And they just have somebody to come and speak. One of the other things that keeps cropping up now is the fact that there are a number of places, and you'll have them around here, I'm sure, where there are retirement homes. And in the complex is everything for the old people, older people. So they're in their own apartments, but they can come out, and in that complex is a hairdresser's, a restaurant, all different kinds of things. Now, this was exactly one of those things down, not about half an hour from where we live. And there was 135 apartments in this building. And about between 50 and 60 eventually came down to the presentation that night. Now, that is, again, something that is cropping up a lot. There's a lot of these retirement complexes up and around the place, and that's an opportunity to get in there to be able to speak to them. The cadets, this was a group in Leicester. I was asked to go and speak to about 30-odd cadets. I was asked to speak to one night. And I told you about some unusual groups. This certainly was an unusual group. This group asked me to go and speak to them. It was actually on the 11th of November, a couple of years ago. And the lady said to me, we actually meet in one of our houses. So she said, you'll come to the house, and nice house. Got to the house and did the presentation in one of her lounges. As I sat down, just waiting to start, I sat down next to a bookcase. And as I looked at the bookcase and just scanned the books, there was a Bible on there. So that's very interesting. Anyway, chatting to the lady, found out she went to church. And because it was November the 11th, and it was around about 11 o'clock, they obviously saw the 2 minute silence on the telly. And then after that, she was asked me to start. But she said, before you start, she said, would you mind just praying? Never been asked to do that before. So I was able to pray and then do the presentation and preach the gospel, hand the tracts out. That was a unique kind of situation, but to do it in somebody's front room. So 1 minute you can be in somebody's front room, the next minute you can be in a building with 100 and odd people in it, or just a room with 10 people in it. One or two gospel halls, of course, have used it. This is over in Northern Ireland, and this is a big gospel hall which they had. I think there's over 200 there that night, so the main hall was filled. This is up from the balcony, the picture on the right, and then there was another hall to the side which they was being relayed through to there as well, and that was in November a couple of years ago. This is the Battle of Britain bunker down in Uxbridge in London. The assembly at Uxbridge got me to go to the Battle of Britain bunker. Now they very busy and active in their invitations, and they actually invited quite a few of the, well, they invited the mayor, who came with his wife. They actually invited their local MP at the time, who was actually Boris Johnson. He didn't come, but he was invited. But there was one or two other quite important people there as well, over 100 people in the Battle of Britain bunker. The Assembly at Ely hired a local senior school and put the presentation on there. I can't remember how many were there that night, but there's a good number there for the presentation there. They're getting more local then, just recently in Peterborough at Orton. We did it on a Saturday morning, and a good number of folks from the area. And actually, it's not just when you do the presentation, it's what actually it leads to. There were some people from another group which I tend to do, which is called the Western Front Association. I'm always a bit going into those groups with fear and trepidation, because they know far more about the First World War than I will ever do, and they know far more about William than I do as well, which is a bit worrying. So, but the Western Front Association were there, and they then wanting to me to then go into their groups, and they were passing information on to other Western Front Association groups over Cambridge way. So it's not just when you do the presentation, it actually is what it leads to afterwards as well, which is good. Then just recently down in Harrow, at the Gospel Hall there, they put a lunch on every month, and there was about 20 odd folks in for that. And then just recently again in November, I think it was, down in the Cotswolds, to the Assembly at North Lee, they actually hired a coffee shop, Coffee One, and did the presentation in the coffee shop. They again going to have it next year and to put it into a different location, to try different locations, different times of day, to try and utilise the presentation to reach folks. Now, you may be familiar with this place, the National Memorial Arboretum, which is just down the road from where we live. It's about half an hour from where we live. And this is a national place of remembrance. The centrepiece to this place is those two big semicircular walls. This is the centrepiece to the arboretum. So there's over 400 memorials in the Arboretum. They have over 300,000 visitors every year, 20,000 of which are children. And we've been to the Arboretum a number of times. There's actually a tree planted there at the Arboretum in memory of William. So they're familiar with the story, and every time somebody goes on the tour that they, you know, you can go on, they always mention William. So they're familiar with the story of William, they know exactly where the tree is and all that kind of thing. And we've done the presentation there a number of times. But just recently I was just thinking of, or trying to think of, other opportunities and other ways we can utilise the presentation. And I thought about the Arboretum, but it's been a while since we've been there. I wonder whether we could get back into the Arboretum. So I went on their website and was just hunting around on their website, and came across the fact that they were looking for educators. They want to have more educators. Now, the educators, they have a learning centre, which these 20,000 children that go round the Arboretum every year, they go through the learning centre, and there's a group of people called the educators who put the children through different activities to do with the war or wars. And William Coltman is mentioned in those activities. So I thought, they're looking for educators. I wonder if I could be one of their educators and the presentation could be part of their, you know, when the children come round, 20,000 children, if 20,000 children are coming round and part of their visit is the presentation, that would be a tremendous way of getting the gospel to thousands and thousands of people. Would eclipse anything I've done in the past. So I just dropped them an email and said that I was interested, I would like to speak to them. And one of their bosses came back to me and said, look, one of the first things we'd like to do is to get you back into the Arboretum because it's a long time since you've been, and I want you to do the presentation to all the educators. Yeah, they talk about William, but you will probably know way more than they do about William. So can you come and speak to them? So just before Christmas, I went into the Arboretum, did the presentation in that room there at the top there, and did the presentation to their educators. It's what led from that, or what hopefully could lead from that, which is important. Not only did I speak to 20-odd people there that day, but then as a result of that, I was asked to then go back to another meeting with them with a view to trying to get a bit closer and do a bit more work with them. And I suggested one or two things. First of all, the fact that I'd like to be part of their program and do the presentation to all the children that come round. Is that a possibility? That was one question I put to them. Then they said, well, some of our staff, if the schools can't come to the Arboretum, we go to them. So I said, well, I already go to schools. Can I go to the schools for you on your behalf and do the presentation? That was another question. Then I said to them, well, what about putting the presentation on for the general public? What about advertising it? And so do a presentation just before lunch, just after lunch, so that they'll use your restaurant, they'll use your shop, spend the money here, but they're going to get the presentation. So all the time I'm thinking about how can we utilise this opportunity. Anyway, the upshot of all of that is that they've come back to me and said, at the moment, because their days are pretty full with the children, they can't see how they can fit the presentation in at the moment. They're not saying a definite no, but at the moment. But the upshot is that they will, what he wants to do is to, any schools that come on saying that we can't come to you, can we go to them? He said, you know, we may be in touch with you on that. Also, he said that we're going to have focused days during the year on different things, and we'd like the presentation to be part of those focused days. So that's another opportunity. And also, they're going to look at maybe doing it to the general public as well. So hopefully things will come from that. And so we will see what happens as far as the future is concerned. Something else that came of that, though, as I was walking out, speaking to one of the educators, he then took me to a man and introduced me to a man. And he said, I want you to meet this guy. He said, his wife works at Whittington Barracks, just down the road, the Army Barracks. Now, the Army Barracks just down the road from the Arboretum is a place where all the people that go into the Army that are trained medically, they all go through Whittington Barracks. Now, on the site of Whittington Barracks is a building called Coltman House, named after William. So he said, this guy's wife works there. So he said, is it all right if you get your details to him? He will pass them on to his wife and she'll get you into there to do the presentation. So I said, absolutely fine. Not thinking really whether it would come off or not. But literally within a few days, this woman from the barracks contacted me and I was asked to go to the Defence Medical Services at Whittington Lichfield to the barracks to do the presentation. There was an open invitation to a lot of the staff that were there. And a lot of the, not only army folks, but a lot of the office staff as well. And the whole point of it was that although that there's a building on there called Coltman House, they were quite concerned that although they knew it was called Coltman House, a lot of the staff and a lot of the people in the army had no idea why it was called Coltman House. So he said, you can come and tell them why. So I went that day. There were about 70 people from the armed forces there. And then they took me across to the building, which is called Coltman House, showed me around the building, wanted to introduce me to a number of the staff that couldn't be in the presentation. And I was introduced to Commander so-and-so and Admiral whoever and whatever. So in the Coltman House is William's picture and also a picture of the replica medals as well. Conversation with one of the top brass from the barracks was this as I was leaving. He said, every person that comes in to train medically, the army, he said, they come here. He said, it would be really nice if every single one of them, when they came here, saw that presentation. Well, I had to agree with him. It would be nice for all the folks coming into the army who are going to train medically, see the presentation, hear the gospel. So we'll wait to see what happens with that. There's another place which I, as I was leaving, when I was with my work, there was one of my customers, his farm was next to a defence medical rehabilitation centre. So anybody that comes back from the army injured that has to go into rehab goes there. So I said, I wonder if they would be interested in the presentation. He said, oh, well, I'm friendly with Commander so-and-so who's in control there. He said, I'll drop them an email and see if they can get the presentation in there as well. So that was another thing, the defence medical situation. So two things there, the Arboretum and then also Defence Medical Services down at the barracks at Lichfield. So looking at the map of where we've been for the last few years, last 3 or 4 years really mainly, that's some of the places and some of those dots I've been sort of in that area a number of times with the presentation, and that just kind of gives you an idea as to where we've been over the last few years. Of course, one of our main efforts, as for all of us, our main efforts really is the Assembly at Winsor, and that's where it should be. That's where our priority lies, that's where the bulk of our work is done, and as well as going into doing the presentation in all these kind of other groups, there's a lot of work to be done here at Winsor. So I just want to mention one or two things about the Assembly that we're involved in, we've been doing. Of course, we put the presentation on there, we did that again this last year, and had over 20 odd folks in from the village to see the presentation. A few other things that we're involved with, well, the Kids Club, it's my responsibility to run the Kids Club every Sunday, and then also we have a Holiday Bible Club. We have been doing one every year in the summer holidays in July / August. This year we're going to do one in April as well at Easter, so we're going to have a week of meetings, week of children's meetings at Easter, and also a week of children's meetings in August. So to run the Holiday Bible Club, so we'll be responsible for that. Also, we've been having a sort of a family tea the second Sunday of every month, which we get a good number into that. And then about 18 months ago, we completely refurbished the inside of our hall. Those of you that have been to Winsor, if you haven't been since the work's been done, you would have known that the hall was getting pretty old and tired over the last few years, so we needed a lot of work to be done. So we completely changed everything pretty much internally in the hall, whether that be heating and flooring, painting, chairs, everything was changed pretty much. But as a result of that, one of the things we really wanted to do, and we waited until all the work was finished, was to start a coffee morning. And that's the last Saturday of the month. We use this as purely as a bridge building sort of effort, in the fact that we want to try and get people into the hall, to break that barrier down of getting through the door, but also then to meet us and to find out that most of us are fairly normal. That hopefully that would lead then onto other things. They would come to other things as a result. And that's exactly what has happened. Because, for example, our neighbours who have been, we invited to the coffee morning, they started to come along to the coffee morning. Now, as a result of that, they come to the tea every month. So they're hearing the gospel, and they were at the World War I presentation as well. So that was a great opportunity. The coffee morning, so that was last Saturday, just before we came down to the conference. We had just under 30 outsiders from the village in on Saturday. So it's a great opportunity to be able to just break down barriers and then invite them to other things. And every single one of them was there, I think, pretty much, apart from the four new people in on Saturday. Apart from those four, everybody else has come to something else. They don't just come to the coffee morning. They've been to some other activity in the hall as well. So there's a picture of the coffee morning, one of the coffee mornings. We've got a good relationship with the care home where my dad is. We've been into that home a number of years now, and we've got a good relationship with the staff, and they bring the residents up to the teas and also to the coffee mornings, and we also then go into the home once a month as well to sing with them on a Sunday afternoon. There's another picture of the coffee morning, set up for the coffee morning. We also provide not only cakes, but we provide breakfast as well, so bacon butties, sausage butties and such like as well. We have a fete in the village, just not far from the hall, every year. So I think it's 3 years we've been doing that now. So we have a stand at the hall, the fete. And this year, of course, the bags that Andy was mentioning on Saturday, we've used to great effort as well. This year was great because they were yellow, bright yellow, so within a few minutes you could see all these bright yellow bags all just moving around the fete, so you knew that was doing a good job. We have been learning as we go as well with something like that, because The first year we had it, we just had stuff out on the table, expecting people to come and look and take, and they didn't, of course. So we learned by our mistakes. So every year now, stuff is put into the bags, and we have people out on the front physically giving bags out and engaging in conversation with people as well. And then there's things on for the children. So there's a table over here for the younger children, the tiny ones, some kind of craft, and then a bigger game for the older kids that size, which they can win prizes as well to get them onto the stand. So that's another picture of the fete. Something we tried a couple of the last 2 years was Christmas time, not only having a carol service, but also carols on the car park to try. The village where the hall is right in the centre of the village. We've now, the shop that was across the road, which has been shut for years and years and years, has now reopened. So we've got a lot more footfall going past the hall. So we're able to engage in people and get people. So we were sort of out on the car park singing carols. This past Christmas, it didn't work, purely because the weather was so bad. It was horrendous. We tried to put the gazebo up and nearly lost it. So we decided to put it away again. So what we're going to do this year, we're going to maybe start out on the car park and then move in, and we're going to do it on Christmas Eve as well. There's one or two people asking us, what are you doing on Christmas Eve as a church? And we said, nothing. Why? So we're going to put that right this year, and hopefully we'll get one or two people in on Christmas Eve. So since I've gone full time, one of the other things I wanted to do and had never got round to was I've started to do some certain things under the banner of Living Hope. And this is one of the things I wanted to do. There's a local magazine called Local Links. And I started to write an article, or ask them, approach them, which I've been wanting to do for a long, long time and never got round to it, and ask them if I could put an article on every month from a church perspective in the magazine. They agreed. Now, this has come with great challenge, and this is still a challenge to me, because Living Hope, we put it in the first time, and this goes into 15,500 homes. So I don't have to do any printing, I don't have to deliver it, but 15,500 homes. Now the problem is that I'm not sure if the person that receives my email doesn't like the gospel, but I've had to try and learn as I go, and I'm still learning. The first few articles, did the article about something relevant that people would understand, and then put the gospel in at the end. They completely missed the gospel bit off and still printed the rest of the article. So I'll try and weave the gospel into the whole article then. And even now, even this past month, they've decided to miss big parts out of the scriptures or the gospel message. So much so that actually somebody, when I was speaking to them the other day, said, just leave it, just forget about it. And I thought, no, that's an open door, which that person, whoever it is that's causing me the issue, might not always be there. So I'm still persisting. It doesn't take a massive amount of time. It's only 300 or 400 words every month. So I'm still persisting with that, purely because there might just be some times when the whole message just does get in there, into 15,500 homes. That's a tremendous opportunity, if only it would work. So I'm just persisting with that at the moment, just to see how that will go. Social media, of course, is another big thing we're trying and have done. I suppose COVID made us think about that quite a lot. And one of the things we started thinking about that was because I had a meeting at work, and we were sending things out to customers for people to view, and we were having a meeting, a debrief from it all, and our IT people were there, and the message that I got from it was they were telling us how many people viewed it, how many people just viewed part of it, how many people viewed all of it. And the message I got from all of that, without going into too much detail, was the shorter the thing, the video, whatever it is, the more chance people are going to view it. So if they're scrolling through Instagram, if it's 5 minutes, they'll just, if it's something that's interesting, they might save it and may go back to it, but maybe not. If it's a minute or less, they probably will view it there and then. So the challenge was going to back to Luke and saying, look, if we're going to do a gospel message to put it onto Instagram, it needs to be a minute or less. So I do the easy bit and do the gospel message in less than a minute. Luke does all the stuff behind the scenes and a minute video. Now, when we started doing that, some of the videos that we've got, if you search under Instagram, there's three accounts that we've got going on Instagram: Winslow Gospel Hall, Living Hope 316, and William Coltman VC. Now, you can go onto those, and some of the videos, thousands of people have viewed them. Literally thousands. So we're trying to persist with that. We'd like to do more of that. It's just time to be able to do that. So that's one thing we're doing. Something else that I've asked to be involved in with the Precious Seed is to try and get younger people involved with, you may be aware of the Precious Seed magazine, but younger people might not be aware that actually within the magazine is YPS, Young Precious Seed. So my problem was, as I went to speak to Precious Seed and said, I don't think young people are reading it. And they said, you're probably right. So I said, well, how do we address this? Because I said, there's some good stuff in there, but how do we get it to young people? Well, I produced a card, which the QR code, you can scan that and it goes straight to some of the articles in YPS and you can view it on your phone. The next thing that we're involved in, which will be out shortly, is actually these articles in an audible fashion, so you'll be able to listen to them. So as you're going to the gym, walking to uni, whatever you're doing, you can listen to some of these articles on YPS. So that's something else that we're involved in. I also started to have these cards printed as well. On one side it just says, scan for good news, and on the back of it is a QR code. If you scan that QR code with your phone, it takes you straight to a gospel message to thank them for scanning the code and then telling them about the Bible and who God is and what the Lord Jesus Christ has done for them. Now, I just pick these, get these printed, and I just leave them wherever I go. So if I'm in a cafe, whatever, supermarket, just leave them by a till. People might say, what's that? Well, I might scan that. Take it home, scan it. Straight to a gospel message. So that's something else that we've been trying to do over the last few months as well. Just briefly to mention schools. I know there are people here who are far more adept at doing schoolwork than I will ever be. But just to briefly mention that I do go into schools. I've taken on the schoolwork that Dad did. Dad was doing a number of schools. And since he took ill in around about COVID time, I then started doing school assemblies online for the schools that he went into because he couldn't do that. And then as a result of that, carried on doing those schools and then trying to develop that as well, trying to get into more schools, which I was talking to Wynn on Saturday about and trying to get his advice on that, doing that as well. Now, those schools can be very varied. So there was one school I was asked to go into in the summer, just before they broke for the summer. I don't know how they got my name, but they actually contacted me and asked me to go in. But they said, we're an infant school. I'd never done an infant school before. So they said, we'd like you to come in and do a full school assembly. Full school assembly is 25 kids. That's the full school, 25 kids. So as a result of that, I started to go in, and then during the summer break, the head contacted me and said, we'd like you to come in every month, every single month. Now, some of those schools will ask you to go in once every half term. Some will ask you to go in once a month. There's some schools that will ask you to go in twice a month. And so that's how it is. Some schools, you have free rein. There are other schools that will say to you, we've got a subject. For example, over a year ago now, the school came back to me and said, the subject on that date is Diwali. You do realise who you're talking to, don't you? Anyway, people at the time said to me, just don't do it. Just tell them you won't do it. And I thought, no, I'll do it. I'll do Diwali. So I went in and spoke about the light of the world. There's always opportunities, so I don't like to turn down opportunities. And so these schools, another unique situation that I like to mention is the fact that there's one school that I go into in Burton, and it's 99% Asian. Just before Christmas, a couple of years ago, as I was going my assemblies just before Christmas, and you do the Christmas story, it's the obvious thing to do. Without even thinking, went into this school, did the Christmas story. As I finished, the teacher got up and said, put your hand up if you celebrate Christmas. One child. How big did I feel? About that big. I thought, I am never doing that again. I am going to learn by my mistake and never do that again. Anyway, this Christmas came round, I went into the school, and quite unusual, the deputy head came out and was chatting away to me just before I started the assembly. And she said, oh, what are you talking about? So I told her, and she said, you're not doing the Christmas story. I said, oh, well. I said, there's a story behind that. I said, I did that 2 years ago, and I said, I felt such an idiot. She said, no. She said, this has got to stop. I said, what do you mean? She said, one of my teachers said to me the other day, are we going to cancel Christmas in this school this year because of our situation? She said, my response was, are we going to cancel Eid then? I thought, wow. I said, you're brave. She said, I'm sick of this. She said, do the Christmas story. She said, I've got them singing carols. She said, I've got a Christmas tree up. She said, I've got the parents coming singing carols, the children singing carols to them. She said, can you change and do the Christmas story? Of course I can. Just give me a minute. Christmas story was done. Unbelievable, isn't it? When you think of where we are and that they turn around and say something like that to you. Anyway, so there's some schools that I go into on a regular basis. There are some schools that I go into just once every year to do the William Coleman story. It's for their remembrance assemblies, and it's a senior school. This school is very dear to my heart. I love going in there every year. The reason I go in, I split the story up into just 15, 20 minute segments. So I do every year, well, the first few years I went in, I did year 7, 8 and 9. The last 2 years, they've asked me to do year 10 and 11 as well. So I do 5 assemblies in 2 days. Each year group is over 400 strong. So there's over 400 students and there's 20 or 30 teachers stood around the edge as well. As I finish what I'm talking to them about, and I have John 3:16 on the screen every time, talk about the story of the two crosses, bring the gospel into them, as I have the last post playing at the end, and you can hear a pin drop. The respect is unbelievable. I love going into this school. So this is another picture of the school, and there we are. So we're going there. I think I've been in there about 10 years now. And the last thing I want to mention, just as we finish, and I apologise for going over time, because I hate people going over time, and I've just done the very thing I hate. But I've done a lunchtime club in one school last year. I'd maybe like to do some more of that as well. That's actually in the school where William went to, the Rangemoor School. So I was able to do a lunchtime club just for half an hour, sing choruses, tell them a story, do a quiz, do a memory verse, just for half an hour, and do the Holy Bible Club in their lunchtime club in there. So, thank you for your interest, thanks for your prayers, really appreciate it. Thanks for coming out again tonight. I know you've had a busy weekend, really appreciate it. Please pray for us as we continue to serve the Lord and use these opportunities, as I'm sure you will have opportunities as well to serve the Lord. Probably very different to me, very different to what we do at Winsall, but it's a great opportunity to be able to tell the greatest message of the greatest person, the Lord Jesus Christ. Shall we pray? Father, we come into thy presence and we give thee thanks for the opportunity to be able to gather together like this. We pray that our hearts might be encouraged as we think of the opportunities that we have. We're living in a day of great opportunity to be able to spread the gospel. We pray that opportunities might continue, doors might remain open for us in schools and many of these groups that we're able to go into to reach the gospel. And we just pray that as the seed that is sown to many of these young hearts especially, it might fall upon good ground, and that there might be many who turn to the Lord Jesus Christ and be saved. Be with us and bless us. Help us, each one of us, as we seek to serve thee and be used by thee. Give us strength and help in all of these things. We give you thanks for refreshment provided for us. We pray for each and every one gathered in thy presence and every assembly represented. Be with us as we part. Keep us safe as we travel, as we ask these things in thy precious name.